it would motivate me. And all of a sudden he's saying stuff that I'm like, I'm scared almost to hear it. And I just was like, I'm gonna die. And it was like a, it was a legitimate, like, if I go this route, I'm going to die. Like, I'm out of control right now.
What is going on, fam? Welcome and welcome back to the Lollapalooza / Burning Man of Strength Training and Functional Fitness, the Uncharted Performance Podcast. I am your host, Paul Wenzel, and our goal, as always, is to learn and apply from the best and brightest by dissecting and deconstructing their personal journeys and accumulated wealth of knowledge and experience to elevate your performance inside and outside of the gym. Once you guys have enjoyed the podcast, please take a moment, a second, to rate and review on iTunes, Stitcher, or whichever podcast listening platform you prefer. It makes us feel pretty good, but also helps our guests gain more exposure and highlight them on the internets. If you're looking for new equipment and you also want to support the podcast, you can definitely check out the Rogue Fitness link on our website, unchartedperformance.com, and browse to your heart's desire. Last but not least, make sure to tag us on Instagram or Twitter whenever you're catching the show. And if you ever have a guest in mind, please hit us up at contact@unchartedperformance.com and let us know who that might be. Last week, I mentioned the next 2 weeks are pretty cool for me personally, starting first with Carl Powley, the author of New York Times bestseller Freestyle Connection. This week, it is AJ Roberts. When I first started getting the podcast, AJ was, quote unquote, a virtual mentor of mine from his podcast, The Fitpreneurs, and his many appearances on Barbell Shrugged. Back then, I never actually thought in my wildest dreams that I spent over an hour having a conversation with one of the most successful strength athletes and fitness entrepreneurs in recent memory. We take you all the way back to Southampton, England, to being a basketball standout, coming to the U.S. and facing some early challenges that eventually led him to become one of the strongest human beings on the planet. You'll hear early on that AJ set the bar very, very, very high for himself, and he was willing to do anything to get there. From becoming the strongest in his school to setting world records as part of the world famous West Side Barbell under Louis Simmons, to leaving it behind and exactly why that happened. We also discuss his rise in the fitness business industry and the ability to thrive as an entrepreneur as well. And of course, our conversation wouldn't be complete without touching on some finer points of strength development and training. A few things to make sure to take a note of and pay attention to that played a big part in AJ's journey: delaying gratification and thinking long-term, incredible mindset, an obsession and suspending all thoughts of what is possible, being a deep and constant learner, being opportunistic, and having the courage to pivot on a dime and walk away from anything, and reframing, redefining strength and happiness. Just a quick reminder, if you guys are free next weekend, December 2nd and 3rd, make sure to come visit us here in the beautiful Cleveland, Ohio, for the Cleveland Clinic Get Fit Expo and the Rogue Winter Classic in association with CrossFit. Make sure to come by and stop by and say hi to us as well. You never know who we might be recording with at that time. And with that, enjoy our conversation with AJ. Take care, guys. AJ, thank you and welcome to the Uncharted Performance Podcast.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to be here.
I want to share a quick story with you, if you don't mind, and if the audience is willing to listen for a couple minutes to me ramble. About four or five years ago, my brother and I were driving up to Detroit. We're in Cleveland. We're driving up to Detroit. It was a very icy road condition, so it took us a little longer to get there. But we're driving up to a Diane Fu weightlifting seminar. And what we had playing on the radio was your old podcast, old episode of your podcast, The Fitpreneurs. And the reason I bring that up is we listened to it driving there and then driving home. We left at like 4:30, and then I think we got back around 11. So just a long day, but. As you grow older, you kind of don't spend as much time with your siblings as you used to, and that was one of those days that I kind of cherish looking back at it. And I actually associated that day with you and listened to that podcast, because a lot of the conversation that my brother and I had was based on what you were talking about, copywriting and whatnot, and other things related to business. So thank you for making that a special day.
Oh, it's very cool to hear. You know, that's the beauty of podcasts, is that you can listen to them anywhere. And the idea is to spark conversation, and sounds like it did just that. So honored to be associated with that that trip. I love Dian Phu. So it sounds all in all an amazing experience.
Yeah, very cool. And that day, I had no idea I would be talking to you in person. So this is a very cool, very surreal experience. From following you since then, and on social media, and then listen to your other podcast, you are I don't want to say obviously quote unquote very successful in kind of everything that you've approached, but you seem very reserved and laid back. You're not the kind of, I guess, entrepreneur that's kind of on your face, you know, on the, you know, YouTube advertisements yelling at you every few minutes. Where does that come from?
That's a great question, because I think that I'm often left thinking, hey, you know, I should do some more marketing and use some of those other approaches. I think that ultimately, like, I've been very blessed over the years to be able to you know, build a great reputation and to really connect with lots of people through podcasts, through you know, in-person seminars and things like that. And so it's afforded me an amazing business, and there's not a massive need for me to do a lot of those I guess in-your-face marketing style campaigns. Mm-hmm. And you know, those things have their place, and they absolutely work, but I take more of a holistic, long-term approach, and really focus on, you know, what do I want my career to look like over the next, you know, 50, 60 years, mm-hmm. versus what I want to look like right now. And so, very similar to when I was lifting, I have this immense ability to delay gratification and really to postpone that need for instant, you know, instant success, so to speak. Okay. And so I guess it comes from this place of playing the long game and having kind of a bigger plan in play, and really making sure that the messages I put out go to the right people at the right time, and that, you know, my reputation and my brand is always, you know, what I want it to be, and it's aligned with who I am at the core.
Okay. That seems at odds in terms of everything that's going on right now. In terms of everything is instant gratification. You know, we need our coffee right now. We need our fix, like, right away. So that's very refreshing to hear that you're holding true to that, even in 2017.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy world we live in, and I think that one of the early lessons I was taught in the business world, but you know, maybe in the sporting world as well, is just, you know, if everyone else is doing one thing, you should probably do the opposite. And, you know, that's something that I really took into heart over the years, and look for my own path, you know. And I don't try to just be a copycat. I don't try to just, you know, fit in with the crowd. And I think that comes a lot from just, you know, having a lot of confidence in who I am as a person, and having a lot of self-respect for myself. And Louis Simmons of Westside Barbell taught me a lot about that, about how, and when I went there, before I went there, I was very into making sure I, you know, posting all my training and videos and trying to do all this stuff. And he asked me, who are you lifting for? You know, who are you training for? And over the years there, just learning from him really gave me a different approach to life, in the sense that, you know, it really was my life, and that I didn't need to, you know, post everything on social media, and that let the results speak for themselves. And, you know, that's the beauty of, you know, becoming great, is that over time, it speaks for itself. And, you know, there still needs to be some calculated moves in there, and some things need to be done in order to position you. You know, if you just, you know, off in the basement somewhere, nobody can find out who you are. But ultimately, ultimately, if you don't have the results to back it up, eventually the bottom's going to fall out. And, he always said, how big is a pyramid? And he always, as big as his base. And so, it's about constantly laying those bricks and building a bigger base so that that peak can be that much higher.
Okay. So before we get to building that base, we usually kind of send out a little quick APB. Hey, we have this upcoming guest on the show, usually when it's on Skype. And a lot of the questions we got back for you was similar to what we're going to be talking about, but one that kind of stood out, and it's like, I guess it's a little funny, but the question was, is your accent a benefit to your success?
It's funny. I feel like I have this like weird blend of accent. It's not American. It's not English. It's just somewhere in between. But, they say that gives you a unique personality. And I think that, when you're doing things like podcasts, and people are tuning in, anything that gives you kind of a unique edge, is a benefit. And so I definitely wouldn't say it's hurt me. I don't know specifically how it's helped me apart from, it's just a distinguishing voice, and I think that that plays in. And I look back about who are some of the people that have accents that I looked up to, and obviously like Arnold Schwarzenegger is one. And it's just something different that kind of gets your attention. So I think that having this weird blended accent of English and multiple American states definitely hasn't hurt the cause.
Got it. That's very cool. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Southampton, England. Okay. And it's the very south, and right across from France.
Okay. What did you do in Southampton growing up?
Yeah. So growing up, I was obviously went to school like most kids.
Yeah.
But most kids in England play soccer, yeah, or football as we call it, and I never really got into that. I played a little bit, but I was never really any good at it. And one of the things that I guess would be unique about me over the years is if I'm not good at something, I tend not to go down that path. Right? I acknowledge it very early on. And so I kind of pick my battles wisely. And so I wasn't very good at soccer, and I had some cousins from America who were collegiate basketball players. They came over and visited when I was young, and I kind of got into basketball. And so I started playing basketball and found that I was pretty good at that. That was kind of what I did mostly. I played basketball and went to school, and then there was a short period I rode BMX and was pretty good at that. But I was getting to a stage where my father told me I needed to pick one or the other, basketball or BMXing. And I had seen MTV Cribs and the NBA stardom, and said, "Oh, I'm going to go for the basketball." Which looking back now is funny with X Games and the way extreme sports have developed. But back at that time, it was the glitz and the glory, and looking to be in the NBA. And with my cousins over here in the States, and having a basketball coach and a path to get there, for me it was nothing was going to stop me in my mind. My 12-year-old mind, that was the future.
What position did you play?
That's a great question. I started out, I was 5'11 when I was like 12. Okay. So I started out as a big man, and then over the years I didn't grow. And so as I didn't grow, I started to move. And by the time I was 14, the other kids had caught up and outgrow me. And so I was moved to a point guard, which, I got some benefits from that, because I kind of knew how each position on the court was to be played, and so I could see the court a lot better than most guards. And so I played point guard, and at 14 I made the England squad. So I trained with the England squad for a while, and I was also playing up three age groups. I was playing under 17s for local teams. So,
oh, wow, that's
and that was my childhood.
Okay, that's really impressive. I had a similar story in terms of growing up in Poland, and obviously soccer and football is the national sport. But I wasn't very good at it either. I always played goalie, and I got kind of shit kicked out of me by all the other older players, including my brother. How did you come to America then?
Yeah, so I came over actually as a foreign exchange student. The basketball school that I trained with in the UK had sent many players over, and so I just went through that same format. Okay. To come over and to be able to play in high school. Obviously the goal was to come over, play, and earn a college scholarship.
Okay. So were you able to gain a college scholarship?
So my junior year, I played and did very, very well, and was selected to the World Youth Basketball team to play in a tournament in Hawaii, and everything was looking great. Uh-huh. And then my senior year, I came back and was informed by the Oregon Sports School Association that I was ineligible to play due to a recruitment ruling. And long story short, we tried to fight it. We went to court, yeah. and we lost. And so I was ineligible to play any sanctioned sports in school. And so my senior year, that's when I began competing in powerlifting. And actually, we started a bowling club, and we competed in bowling, and we made it to state at bowling. So I was actually a district bowling champion, as well as a powerlifting. Started powerlifting, senior year competed. And that same year, I won the deadlift championships in Las Vegas. I think I deadlifted 515 pounds or something like that, maybe 540. I can't remember which one was my one that won the world championship. But that was kind of my entry. And, as they say, kind of my first competition I won, and I kind of got bit by the iron bug.
So when did you start powerlifting? If you were playing basketball?
Yeah, so when I came over, I'd grown up in England. Really, the only thing I'd seen is Olympic weightlifting and strongman. So I didn't even know the sport powerlifting existed. Uh-huh. And one day, I always wanted to lift weights. My parents weren't big fans of that. When I was living in England, because I was playing basketball, I wanted to get stronger for that. So I got myself some weights, and I'd lift in my bedroom. And I didn't really know what I was doing. I was reading the old Flex magazine and what I could get my hands on. And we didn't have the internet back then. So, I did what I could, but basically just bicep curls and bench press. And I came over here and in high school, and they had a weightlifting club, and I was a three-sport athlete my junior year. I played football, basketball, and did track and field. And our weightlifting coach, who also was our football coach, he had the Bigger, Faster, Stronger magazines. And he had about probably 2 or 3 years worth of subscription magazines. And I just started reading those, and I ended up going through all of those my junior year, and really understanding strength and conditioning from my limited knowledge and access that I had, and made it my goal to have every record in the school. And so as I became one of the strongest people in the school, a local lady said, "Hey, have you ever thought about competing in the sport of powerlifting?" I've never even heard of powerlifting. Uh-huh. And she explained what it was, and she had competed at the world level. And, that was first opened my eyes. And having the competitive nature that I did was an outlet for me while I wasn't able to play. And so, it really kept me sane. And like I said, after my first competition, I realized that I was a little bit stronger than the average Joe, at 17. And, that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to see where this can go. And then when I went into college, uh-huh. I actually was going to walk on at the University of Idaho to play football, but had some paperwork issues, couldn't get through NCAA clearinghouse, and began training with Brent Mikesell, who was the world record holder at the time for the squat at 11:41. And I would drive up a couple hours to train with him and then drive back with one of the strength and conditioning coaches from WSU. By the time I was cleared through NCAA, it was spring, and I really started enjoying my training, and I just decided I wasn't gonna try to walk on. I was just gonna do powerlifting, get my college degree. And I didn't know at the time that the sport of powerlifting, had no money, and there wasn't gonna be a career in just that. But for me, I was training with who I was training with. I was kind of starstruck, and I knew right away that I want. First time I he asked me what I wanted. I said, "I want to be a world record holder like you." He kind of laid out some basic rules and said, "If you do this, then you got a chance." And that was it. I had my my path, and for the next decade, that's what I chased.
So you set your goals pretty high at a pretty young age. And
I guess I've always done that.
Going back to 12 years old. So what do you do after college? I mean, where do you go to train? How do you keep getting stronger? How do you chase that goal of being the strongest man in the world, the world record holder?
Yeah, so I was growing up and training with Brent, and then Brent retired. He had some health issues and retired. And so I had a small crew that I was training with. in Spokane for a little bit. And, you know, Brent always followed Westside Barbell principles, and okay. I had met Louis at meets and stuff. And so one day I just decided to give him a call and see what it would take to move there. And at the time I was a top 10 lifter, and you know, I told him my lifts. I'd squatted 1,005, at, you know, bench 731, deadlifted, I think 705. And, you know, he said to me, well, you'd be the weakest guy, but you could train in the morning. So, you know, he said, let me know when you're going to move. And of course, I didn't have a plan for that at the time. I was running in gym unsuccessfully. I wasn't doing very well with that. I really didn't understand this business. And so started trying to figure out how am I going to get to Columbus, Ohio, and to train at Westside Barbell. And a job opportunity came up. I actually went to hire these guys as my coaches, and they offered me a job to be in charge of their personal training department in Kentucky, Owensboro, Kentucky. And I did a little Google map search and realized that it was about 4 hours away from Westside. And so I took that job, and every Friday I would drive 4 hours, train at Westside, and then drive 4 hours back. And so I did that for about 8 months before Louis said I was crazy and I just need to move there. And and then that was when I took that leap and I moved full-time to Columbus, Ohio. And by then, I really had mastered the art of marketing and sales, and really understood online marketing. And so was making more money doing than I was at the health club. And so I just decided I could take that leap move to Columbus.
Okay. So I want to follow a couple threads, because there was a few things going at the same time. How do you go from 540 to 1,000 in the first place? How do you get strong enough to make the call to Louis? What were you doing in terms of training?
Well, I mean, I just literally followed the Westside Barbell principles, and okay. I was, you know, I think the biggest thing was the environment I was in. I was just, uh-huh. I was with another world record holder. I was with other strong people. I wasn't the strongest in the group, and so, you know, it was just a case of showing up, doing the work, and that was probably the biggest key, is the environment I was in, and you know, obviously I had the structure.
Okay.
But being around those guys, and you know, it just that what was my reality wasn't the reality of most people. I didn't know that a normal person shouldn't be able to lift 1,000 pounds, considering my training partner, I'd seen him rep it for multiple reps, you know? And so when you're witness to that, and also Ryan Kennelly lived in the area, he lived in Washington. And as well, and so when we would compete in meets, Ryan Kennelly would be there. Ryan Kennelly, his bench press, I believe 1075 is his biggest bench press. But at the time, he was in the 800s. And so for benching, you know, it was just when you bench 800 pounds. And these are the kind of things that I saw on a regular basis. And so it just, you know, when you see it often, it's kind of like the 5 minute mile. You know, the first guy that does the 5 minute mile is amazing. But you look back now, and if you don't run a 5 minute mile, you know, you're considered not even a good runner. And so that was kind of the mindset was I was in. You know, I was just lifting alongside incredible lifters, and it was what became normal to me. I'd suspended any thoughts of what was possible and just said, well, they've done it, I can do it. It's just a case of following in their footsteps. And so I think that was really a blessing in disguise, is being able to be around that mindset and just, you know, not accepting, you know, a 500 pound or a 600 pound or a 700 pound or an 800 pound lift as heavy. You know, it was just, that was what it was. And, you know, being able to witness that, you know, mm-hmm. Be around that, you just kind of keep putting more weight on the bar, and it keeps going up. And I guess it's a blind faith that, you know, it's a trusting in the process. But it was one of those things. And for me, I was willing to do anything and everything. And so, you know, Brent told me I had to push my body weight up. I was about 200 pounds when I started training with him. And within a year, I was 260. And luckily had a all-you-could-eat meal plan at the University of Idaho. And the restaurant-like place would open for 2 hours at a time. And so I would go at the beginning of the hour, and I would sit there. And at the top of the hour, I'd eat again. And I'd sit there. And at the end of the 2 hours, I'd eat. So I'd eat three times in 2 hours. I'd do that three times a day. So I ate nine meals a day, all you could eat. Not healthy whatsoever, just, you know, piling food in. But most people get the freshman 15. I got the freshman 60. And, you know, I just was dedicated to it. I studied it. I learned it. I didn't party. I didn't go out. You know, training was the most important thing to me. And I think that it was just that willingness matched with the environment and the suspense of what was possible just set me up to just continue to get stronger. And every meet I would add, you know, 50 pounds to my total, and it just became normal to me. And so my expectations were to continue to just keep getting stronger. And it wasn't until I started to get to those big numbers that it began to slow down.
Okay. So at what point do you gain the acumen for business? Because as you mentioned, you weren't doing so well your first time around. But then...
Yeah, so in college, like working in the strength conditioning room, I realized that everyone, all the coaches had student debt, mm-hmm. and were in trouble with that, and they're always talking about not having money. And so I just quickly realized, I said, well, looking around here, okay, this isn't really what I want to do. And so I thought, well, what would it take to open my own facility? And so I was turned on to a couple of guys. Eric Cressy actually was a friend of mine, because through the lifting, he was competing in powerlifting at the time. Okay. And he was, you know, he'd put out some DVDs. He was writing for T Nation. And so I just kind of asked him, hey, like, you know, what should I do? And he said, hey, come to this boot camp. So it was this marketing sales boot camp. And, you know, I really got into learning about that there. And that was kind of my first exposure to this online world of being able to create information products. Mm. And things like that. And so there were some successful gym owners there, and a lot of these guys you know, had online products as well as running the gym. And so I said, okay, well, I can do this. I'll open the gym, you know, I'll get some results, and then I'll do some online stuff. And I did an online information product where I interviewed a bunch of strength coaches out there and put together a product. And so I was selling that inside. I was writing a newsletter. So I was doing a lot of little things, but I didn't really understand the marketing and the sales. You know, I had, you know, I was a good trainer. I was good at riding. You know, I was good at, you know, connections and knowing people, but I didn't really understand how do I get it out there. And so it wasn't until, I moved to Kentucky and was, running the personal training department. I ended up actually running the entire health club, but the owners of that were consultants, fitness consultants. And so, you know, I paid a lot of attention, and mm-hmm. they keep talking about this guy named Dan Kennedy. And so I was turned on to this guy named Dan Kennedy, who's a legend in the marketing, direct response marketing world, and started getting his books and his newsletters. And I'm a very deep learner. I become obsessed in subjects. And so from there, I just kind of continued to go deeper and deeper. And I got so good at it that I would make recommendations, and before long they said, hey, what do you want to just run the marketing department? And so I ended up, you know, being their chief marketing officer and running the marketing for them. And at the time we had a couple of businesses, and then, you know, by I don't know how many years it was that went by, maybe 5 or 6 years that I was with those guys. You know, we'd build out over a dozen businesses, and, you know, all of our businesses were high six figure, over seven figures. And so, you know, I was running the marketing for all of that. And at that point, they wanted to go in a different direction into franchising. And I decided I wanted to go and launch other experts and kind of do some of my own stuff. And so that's when we parted ways. And so this was very, you know, simultaneous with the powerlifting, because okay. like I said earlier, powerlifting didn't pay. Yeah. So I had to figure out a way, how could I have this laptop lifestyle, travel all around the world to compete, and not, you know, have to work a regular job that would distract me from the lifting. And so it was really, it was out of necessity that I had to master the art of, you know, running businesses, in order to be able to live the life I wanted, which was to be 100% dedicated to powerlifting.
Gotcha. So when you get to Westside, how did, I guess, your training change? How did the, if at all, or your approach to training?
So as I mentioned earlier, like, I was training the West Side way, right? And, yeah. you know, they always say, unless you've gone to West Side, you're not training West. And so the funny story, I show up first time to train, and it's a Sunday, it's a speed bench day. Louis says, jump in with me, and he's got the bamboo bar set up, and it looks like it's got maybe 100 pounds on there and hanging kettlebells. And for those that are listening, unfamiliar with the bamboo bar, it kind of, it's a very flexible bar. And so it oscillates in multiple directions. And anyway, I take the biceps, old man doing it. He's laying down in the incline bench, and he's just, you know, repping it out for reps, you know, 20 reps. Looks smooth as butter. And so I lay down, I take it out, and I think to myself, man, this is light, you know. And I come down and I press up, and those kettlebells start bouncing. And all of a sudden that bamboo bar crashes into my neck, crashes into my stomach, crashes into the rack. And Louis picks the bar off of me, and he looks at me and goes, you got a lot to learn. And that was really the beginning of realizing that even though I'd read every book Louis had put out, I'd read the article he'd put out, watched his DVDs. I was teaching powerlifting seminars at this time, because I was a top 10 lifter and people had asked me to do seminars. So I'd done some seminars. And it was that moment I realized that, you know, it's like in mixed martial arts when you get the black belt, you know, you just begin. That's when you actually can now learn how to fight. And that was kind of the experience of Westside. You know, I thought I knew all this stuff, and I got there and I realized pretty quickly that, man, I've only just been scratching the surface. And so that's when I just decided, okay, like, I'm not going to question Louis. And Dave Tate gave me a lot of good advice, and I'm just going to listen. And I'm just, you know, sometimes stuff didn't make sense, and I wanted to argue with him and, find out, like, well, why do you want me to do this? It doesn't make any sense. But I just surrendered the ego and just, trusted the process. And there was a lot of times where I'd say, hey, what should I, I don't understand this. And, what should I study? And he would give me one of the manuals, the Russian manuals or Soviet manuals. And I would have to figure it out. And that was kind of how that educational process went. But it really was just this, surrendering to the fact that even though I knew the idea of what the conjugate system was, I didn't understand what made it so special. And that, when Louis talks about it being concepts and theories based on science, it's not sets, reps, boxes, bands, it's none of that stuff. And it really is about understanding like where you are and what your body needs, and then actually having the science to make those changes and training, getting stronger outside from being under the bar and things like that made such a big difference that I never really understood before. And so it was, it was a massive learning curve. And again, it was an environment where, although I was strong, I wasn't the strongest guy. Mm-hmm. And, I was able to watch the other lifters. And, one of the guys I trained with, Tony, Balagoni, he would be over there repping, doing tricep presses, dumbbell presses, tricep presses, laying down with 110-pound dumbbell. And, first time I tried, I could only get 60s. Here's a guy that benches almost 900 pounds. I'm at 700. If I get my tricep presses up, then maybe my bench will go up. You see? And so that I would be able to see the correlation between my weak points and then the overall lift. And, the easiest way to think about it is it's not about getting the body 100 pounds stronger. It's about unlocking 100 pounds more in strength. And a lot of times, if you've got a kink in the armor and you take that kink out, all of a sudden you unlock a large amount of strength, and that can be done from getting stronger. It can be done from tissue quality. It can be done from all these different things. But it's about unlocking strength, not always getting stronger. And that's one of the things people miss, and I think Olympic weightlifters miss that a lot too, is they continue to do the same thing over and over and over again, hoping for a half a pound of PR and things like that. And that was something that I never really understood before I walked in those doors.
There are a number of things I am not good at. Surfing, statistics, accounting, WordPress, and my split jerk needs some work. These are a few that come to mind right away. What I am good at, though, is knowing what I am not good at and knowing when to stop to try to figure things out on my own, ask for help, unless those that are much more knowledgeable. While working on multiple projects, coaching, self-development, and training, aka getting jacked and Sopel, my time is the most valuable commodity, so I need to be efficient with how I dedicate it. Which brings me to Ceteris. As a health and fitness entrepreneur, dealing with your finances, accounting, and tax preparation can be a headache. March and April are not my most fun months of the year. Ceteris specializes in accounting for health and fitness businesses and takes care of all that work for you, for you, so you can focus on the things that you need to focus on, like programming for your clients, or taking your next certification, while giving you full access to your financial data and benchmark reporting through their platform, Ceteris Edge, which is built on top of QuickBooks Online. While they offer tax accounting, many of their customers also retain their current CPA and use Ceteris for month-to-month accounting and benchmark reporting, which their CPAs also love. To learn more about Ceteris Fitness Business Accounting and Benchmark Reporting Solution, please visit www.ceteris.com/UnchartedPerformance. If you sign up through our podcast, you will get 50% off your first 2 months. We'll include that link in the show notes. So if you're listening on the go, make sure to jump to our website and this episode. Key benefits of Ceteris. Do it for me. Your accounting and bookkeeping should be done for you by a team of experts who know accounting for your business inside and out. Benchmark reporting. Small business entrepreneurs can operate better business when they can compare their financial performance against peers in their industry. Ceteris provides peer benchmarking with franchise brands to optimize entrepreneurs' insights. A team, not a person. With a team of experts behind you, you should never worry about what happens if your account goes on vacation. Industry-specific expertise. Your accountant should specialize in businesses like yours to ensure that they know how to optimally code and categorize your transactions. Professional response time. A dedicated point of contact will respond to emails and requests within 24 hours. Cloud-based. Your accounting should be kept up to date securely in the cloud. No risk of losing data. No sending large files back and forth. And you can access your financials anywhere, anytime. And for us on the go, mobile entrepreneurs are on the move, having the most critical information on the health of their business in the palm of their hand allows for better and faster decision making. So get back doing to and focusing on the things that drive you and your passion, and get help with all that fuzzy math stuff. Again, link is www.ceteris.com/uncharted performance. And now back to the show. Are there any particular exercises that help you the most, or let me rephrase that question? What were your biggest weaknesses, and what helped you, you know, fix those chinks in that armor?
Yeah, obviously for me, because it was very specific what we were trying to train for, I was able to look at the other lifters, and you know, everyone at Westside had these huge upper backs.
Okay.
And I looked in the mirror, I didn't have a huge upper back. So, okay, we gotta add in a lot of face pulls, a lot of upper back work, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone had huge thick erectors. You know, I don't have huge thick erectors. I got this big ass, that's why I'm squatting, but I don't have these big erectors, that's why my deadlift's not there. I better start doing back raises and good mornings, right? And you know, one of the things, there's a great book called Talent Code that kind of breaks down why these little pods of results happen, you know, at different schools around the world. And Westside, if you consider it like a school of lifting, you know, it's no different. But you know, the box squat, going to below depth every single week, over and over and over and over and over and over, you know, that repetition perfects the technique. And same with the speed bench, perfects the technique. And so, you know, if you do it wrong, then you're just, you know, you're doing hundreds of reps wrong. So you got to have it right. And being in an environment, you know, every rep you had a coach, every single rep, someone was yelling at you. And so that's what made all the difference in the world. And you know, the staples, really, reverse hypers were huge. And, you know, Westside has four different types of hypers. So you're able to rotate through the different hypers. Hamstring, you know, hamstring work. Louis came up with unique ways. He's invented a couple new machines now for your hamstrings, but the hamstrings, because they were so important. And then, you know, so much so that at one point we're doing too much hamstring and we realized, hey, we got to bring our quads up. And so, you know, we were able to use the plyo swing and things like that. And it was really just a case of, okay, what's weak, fix that. Okay, what's weak, fix that. And so the compounding effect of that, you know, over the years just adds up. And I think that's what most people don't realize. Like, if you squat and you have shitty technique in the squat, it's because you have a weakness. If you keep squatting, you usually are always going to lean on your strengths, right? You're going to go to the bad technique happens because that's actually where the strongest part of the and the body's shifting weight to protect the weak areas. And so trying to get stronger under the bar, there's a limit to that, right? And so we really focused on getting stronger outside of the bar, really targeting the muscles, creating unique situations. And I think that that's something most people don't think about. A lot of people who do Westside, a lot of people who do conjugate, I should say, they do the main exercise. I think that's the most important part. And that's about 20% of the workout. And it's the other 80% that makes the difference. So I think that kind of, you know, I know you were looking for specifics there, but I think that, I mean, if I would say anything, I would say bands are probably the biggest training tool that's underutilized because you can't mimic that effect. You know, the pulling the weight down, overspeed eccentrics, you can't mimic that. You can pull the weight down as hard as you want, but it's never going to mimic that. The constant tension on the bar, it's never going to mimic that. So being actually having to squeeze through lockout. You know, a lot of people I see deadlifting with just straight weight, obviously the smaller the lever, the easier it typically is to lift a weight. So with lighter weights, you'll explode off the ground, but you'll coast through lockout. You put a band on there, you can't do that. So you learn to squeeze all the way through lockout. And if you ever watch any of the Westside lifters, usually if they struggle, it's off the chest or out of the hole or off the ground. As soon as that breaks, as soon as they get past that sticking point, the lockout is usually the quickest part, and it's because we use bands. And of course, with everything, you can overuse it. You know, people swing the pendulum too far one way or the other. But for me, I would say the bands is the biggest training tool that you can really use on any exercise that adds, gives you an advantage.
Okay. How long did it take you to break those records, being at Westside?
I think it was around, it was just under 4 years that I was there. So it was about just over 3.5 years. And I would have broke it earlier. But a year before I broke the record, I was approaching the record, and Jonas Ratnan from Finland, he out of nowhere took the record from, it was like 26.65, I think. And he took the record to 27.99 overnight. And all of a sudden, you know, here I am. Closing in on this record, thinking it's going to be my time soon, and just out of nowhere, this massive man from Finland just destroys it. Uh-huh. And you know, I talked to Louis, and he said, "Well, you know, we're just going to have to work a little bit harder." And so, you know, head down and grind it. And a year later, you know, I took that record and put it up to 28.25. You know, that was the journey. It was a surreal moment. It was one of those meets that everything comes together, uh-huh. and it's almost like all the stars aligned. You know, to be able to realize that potential that you felt you've had for so long, there's just something special about that. You know, no one can ever take that moment away from you.
Well, what did you take away from Westside besides the world records and the training?
So, so many life lessons there. I think, you know, people who visit, the things that they come away with, they oftentimes they don't realize how hard we train, you know, how hard we work. And the fact of the matter is that, you know, we've given up everything in order to become the best. That's our job to us, you know. Even though there's no one giving us a paycheck, you know, to us, that's the most important thing. And so, you know, I think that the lesson that I learned throughout my career was, if you want something badly enough and you're willing to do whatever it takes, then, you know, within reason, you can make it happen. And I think that was one of the things, like the Louis' belief in you, you know, and he knew how to motivate you correctly. But the camaraderie, even though it's an individual sport, you know, you realize that nobody does this alone, and it takes a team to build a champion. And you know, that was something that was I think very beneficial to see. And that goes across the board with everything. You know, any successful business or any successful athlete, there's always a team behind it. You know, you always got to build that team. And obviously, the environment. You know, putting yourself in an environment to succeed. You know, sometimes your local town isn't the best place to be, and you're going to have to uproot if you want it bad enough. Right. You know, Louis always said, don't do anything that doesn't make you happy. And ultimately that's why I ended up retiring, because I just wasn't happy anymore. I wasn't happy with my health, and I wasn't happy with relationships and things like that. So, and that was a big lesson. But, you know, Louis is very stoic. He's very, you know, modern day samurai. And so that led me down some paths, you know, into Buddhism and stoic lifestyle and things like that, that I don't think he'll ever realize the impact he's had on my life outside of those four walls. And I've told him, you know, but I just don't think he'll ever fully be able to appreciate it, because, you know, Louis is a powerlifting coach. That's his life. He'll die in under the bar. I'm almost positive of it. And he dedicated his entire life to that. You know, and for those of us that leave, and, you know, we can go through a list of all the successful people out there that have come through Westside Barbell, other strength coaches out there that have built incredible businesses and gone on to be, you know, phenomenal educators, have come through Westside. But Louis doesn't fully grasp that, because he's still focused on Westside. He's still focused on making that the best gym ever. You know, he's still focused on producing the next champion. But I think that just seeing the way he is, the way he lives, and that as an example of how you should be in life, is just phenomenal. And I remember watching the documentary, Euro's Dreams of Sushi. And if you haven't seen that documentary, you can watch that. It's basically that guy is Louis, that same guy. He's in his 90s. He's running his little sushi place in Japan, you know, world renowned, seats 10 people. And that's Louis. and, you know, routine and habit. And, you know, it's just the lessons there were just phenomenal. And, you know, I still draw parallels to this day. I'm like, oh, okay. Like, I see where this came from, you know?
Yeah. You mentioned you weren't happy and you retired. So where do you go from there?
So I knew that if I stayed in the environment, I would never escape. You know, to be at Westside, you got to be 100% committed. Uh-huh. In my mind, you got to be 100% committed, and you're only there for one reason, and that's to break records and put your name on the board. And after my final meet, I squatted 1205. You know, sitting with Louis, and he said, you know, I think if you push your body weight up to 350, we'd go for 3000. And first time in my career, that just sounded absolutely ludicrous. Up until that point, I would say stuff and Louis would challenge me and I'd be like, fuck you, old man. And, you know, it would motivate me. And all of a sudden he's saying stuff that I'm like, I'm scared almost to hear it, you know? And I just was like, I'm going to die. And it was like it was a legitimate, like, if I go this route, I'm going to die. Like, I'm out of control right now. And so I knew I needed to get out of the environment. And so I had visited California. And San Diego is paradise to me, and there, you know, the lifestyle out there is a lot different. People are a lot healthier. Mm-hmm. So I just made the decision that I was going to go and I was going to move to California. And so I just made that happen. You know, was a couple of months after I retired, I was gone.
Okay. So what do you do in San Diego?
So a friend of mine, he owns a company called Haxon Films, and they made the Blair Witch Project. Uh-huh. He's also an internet marketer. So he was going off to shoot a movie, okay. And we had talked, and he said, hey, why don't you come in and run my company? So I came in. I started running his online marketing company for him while he was off shooting movies for about 10 months. Uh-huh. And at the same time, I was doing the CrossFit powerlifting seminar. Side Louis asked me to keep doing those. So I was doing those, okay. Traveling the world doing those. So, you know, I had stuff going on. You know, that was kind of, I feel like I'm very open to opportunities and things that open up to me. And I feel very much that my life aligns. There's always just an opportunity that appears that, like, you know, guides my life. And so these kind of things are all very natural. So, it's hard to say, you know, this happened because of this, but it was, you know, I made this decision and this opportunity came up and then I came out and, you know, from there I was able to really reset and start figuring out what it is I want and, you know, get my health in check and those kind of things. And so it was just the, you know, as hard as it was to leave, as hard as it was to walk away from my friends and really, you know, Westside is like my home. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's one of the first places I felt like I really truly belonged and I truly fit in. Like, people truly got me. I could be myself. And, you know, when I said I was going to break a world record when I was 18, people thought I was nuts, you know? But, you know, here I am a decade later and I'm the world record holder. But at Westside, people didn't think that, you know? I told Louis I was going to get a top 10 bench. He said, you're crazy. I said, you just watch, old man. And, you know, and he goes, well, if you say, I believe you. And I ended up with that top 10 bench, you know? And so those are the kind of things that it was hard to walk away from that. But sometimes in life, you just know, mm-hmm. when you need to make a change. And a lot of people live in fear and they know for a long time they need to make that change. And they just continue to do the same thing over and over again, even though they know. And in my experience is that voice inside that's guiding you, it doesn't go away. It doesn't get quieter. Once it's there, once it's trying to push you in a certain direction, it just gets louder and louder and louder, and things that happen. And I knew that if I had stayed at Westside, you know, I would have got hurt. I would have had an injury. I would have had a heart attack. I would have had a stroke. I would, you know, the writing was on the wall. I could see it in people who had been there. I could see it in the direction my life was going. I could see it in my health, you know, as I was pushing my weight, constantly pushing that body weight, force feeding myself. I had sleep apnea, all this. I knew that it was just going to get louder. This voice was going to get louder. And so, you know, I've become very good at just surrendering to that voice. When I get that thought process, like, this is what I need to do, I'm not afraid to pivot on a dime. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not afraid to walk away from everything and move. And it served me very, very well. And that intuition and listening to that gut feeling, there's a lot of research around gut feelings and actually, you know, the body having the mind not being the mind and things like that. But mm-hmm. I truly believe most people, they feel called to certain things. They feel pulled, you know, whatever it is, and they'll ignore it. But that just never goes away, and it eats them away if they don't, you know, eats them up inside if they don't listen, if they don't take action. And so I'm not sure why I do that, but, you know, it served me very, very well. And that was one of the times where I just knew it was time. It was time to go. The opportunity arose. You know, it was kind of like a perfect storm, and I was out of there.
Did you ever pivot and it didn't work out, or didn't work out as well you thought it would?
I mean, I've been married and divorced and engaged and separated, and you know, my health's gone up and down, and you know, business, I've had failure after failure. But you know, the one thing, and it's important to note, I think, is that I'm a very positive guy. I'm very, you know, opportunistic, always trying to look on the bright side. And so there's a lot of shit that goes wrong all the time. But a failure to me is just a lesson learned. And I think the mistake in life is if you don't learn the lesson, right? And so, you know, I've become a better man because of my divorce. I've become a better man because of the broken engagement. You know, I'm remarried and I have the best relationship I've ever had. And it's not, I have an amazing partner. She's just absolutely phenomenal. But I've become a better man because of the mistakes I've made in the past, and going and saying, okay, why did I make these mistakes? Or why did this even happen in the relationship? Or how do we get to this point? And that constant learning, that constant evolving, and that every failure I've had has given me a lesson. And so a lot of times, obviously, when I'm interviewed or when I'm talked, it's hard for me to look at those things as a negative, because to me, those are the things that have shaped my character. Those are the things that have made me better. And so it's hard to see it as that. So, you know, I don't want it to sound as if I haven't had the struggles. I think that anyone who's an entrepreneur will recognize that it's a very lonely journey. You're on a fucking roller coaster. You know, one day you're on the top of the world. The next day you think the world's going to come crumbling down around you. It's almost like, you know, a bipolar roller coaster. But the thing that I've constantly been able to do is just look at every situation and say, what is going on here and why did this happen? And from that, I've been able to come out to it. So almost so much so that now in the world, I'm like looking for those things. It's like, bring it on, because I know that if everything is quiet, if everything is still, if everything is good, that there's a storm brewing, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I want to find the storm before it turns into a category five. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I want to figure that out. And so, I think it's things like that that make me a little bit different. But it's just a reframe. It's just looking at things through a different lens. And I think that, you know, most people, a lot of times a failure will take them out of the game, you know, and whether it's the universe's way of testing you to see if you really have what it takes to make it to the end, you know, whatever the end may be, or whether it's just, you know, the fears and whatnot. I think that everybody, if they look at something that happens and say, why did this happen? There's always something positive that can come out of it. There's always a lesson you can learn. It comes from taking that responsibility and saying, you know, you can't be responsible for others, but what did I do? You know, how did I act, or how did I show up? And you can't, if someone's going to be the way they are, they're going to be the way they are. If life's going to, if you get fired, or if business doesn't go the way you planned, if you're an entrepreneur and you're doing your own thing, things happen, bad things happen. Not everybody, you know, not, it's not always smooth sailing, but you can say, okay, well, that didn't work, so I know not to do that. And I think that's important. You know, I think some of the best inventors in the world, you know, it's because they failed 1,000 times that, you know, that's why we have the light bulb. I think that's the important thing to understand. And it's the same with lifting. You know, when I was chasing my first 1,000, you know, I didn't get it my first try. And, you know, you go away, you figure, okay, well, that didn't work. So let's, what can we try differently? It's just it's a process of elimination. And the more things you do that don't work, the narrower it gets until you find that one thing that it does.
Is there anything that you haven't tried that you would want to? Like, let's say you could pivot to that thing right now. What would that pivot be?
I want to go skydiving. So you got to be like 235, and when I did the bodybuilding show after powerlifting, I was I was 220 the day before my show, and then I was 230 the show, and I was like 245 like within a week. And so, but the goal is is now, as I just focus on my health and focus on longevity, uh-huh. Versus performance or competition. You know, once I get back to 230, that's the thing I'm going to do, is I'm going to go skydiving. And really, you know, for me, it's just about doing the things that, you know, are unusual. And, you know, I would like to, you know, go climb, you know, summit some mountain and things like that. But skydiving, I don't know why. I just want to feel what it's like to fly.
Same here, man. Same here, actually. When do you think you'll get that done?
Well, right now, you know, I'm not necessarily, like I said, I'm not focused on performance. And so my body has been through the ringer with the powerlifting and with CrossFit for a little bit and getting injured and then doing the bodybuilding show. And you know, I looked at myself one day, I said, what am I doing? You know, like I'm not being healthy. This isn't healthy. Mm-hmm. Like, extreme is not healthy, you know? And, you know, from there I had some hormone issues and, you know, everything that I'd been masking for years came to surface, and, you know, adrenal fatigue and, you know, problems with my thyroid and stuff like that. And so I don't like to use any of that as an excuse, but what it's made me do is slow down. It's made me slow down. It's made me start to look at how do I heal from the inside out. Mm-hmm. And so really it's just a process right now. And, you know, every single week I get a little bit lighter, and that's all I can hope for, is just to continue to move down. And so, you know, I don't really have a deadline on it. And, gotcha. Which is very odd for me, because I'll tell people you need the deadline. No, the problem is I could put a deadline on for the next 90 days and I'll do whatever it takes to get there, mm-hmm. but it's not sustainable. And I think that that's something that, you know, one of the things of being competitive is it's a double-edged sword. And like I said, you know, I'm focused on what is health now and what is longevity. And, you know, the way I was living wasn't longevity. You know, and I want to start a family, and I don't want to pass away before my time. And so I just look at it and say, okay, it's about taking a different approach. My body can't just go bang weights and be okay. You know, the way my body responds is different now. And so, you know, I had to embrace things like yoga and swimming and, you know, walks and hiking, versus just loading the bar up. And sometimes it's very, very hard, because I want to just throw weight on the bar. But it's teaching me patience, and it's teaching me a different approach. And I'm learning a lot through the process, a lot about myself and, you know, the habits and things that, you know, you start to wonder, okay, this made me who I am. But maybe this isn't a good thing, you know. It gave me my drive, but at the same time, is it what also made me unhappy? And so you kind of start to look at everything and say, okay, what's the good in this? And what's I wouldn't say what's the good or bad, but you know, what is this like for what it is, you know? Mm. And you know, is it working? And is my life working, going this way? And if the answer is no, it's like, okay, well, let's just let go of that. And I don't regret anything I've done in the past. I wouldn't go back and change anything. If I went back knowing what I know now, I probably wouldn't do the things I did. But I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't because of that. So it's kind of like the chicken and the egg. You can't say, I won't do this. I won't do that. Yeah, I wouldn't be here. I wouldn't be who I am. And, you know, I think it's just one of those things you just surrender to. This is who I am. And I don't need to understand why I'm this way or why I'm AJ Roberts. I just need to accept who I am and then continue to take each day as it comes.
Okay, that's actually a great segue. So it's a hypothetical scenario. We're flying to, I don't know, Calgary, and we're on the same flight, and I sit down next to you and I ask you a question. Not what you do, but who is AJ Roberts? Who is AJ Roberts right now?
You know, I'd just say someone who has a relentless pursuit to become the best version of myself. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really how I live each day. I just look at who I am as a man and say, you know, how can I improve? You know, whether it's the area of my relationship, whether it's the area of business, whether it's the area of spirituality or health. You know, what does I need to work on, and you know, what do I need to improve? And so it's a constant chiseling of the character, so to speak. And you know, sometimes it's like when you're peeling the onion, the deeper you go, the more fucked up you think you are. You know? But it's about accepting who you are, and then, you know, controlling what you can control and letting go of what you can't.
Okay. Well, I want to start winding down because I understand your time is very valuable, and I don't want to keep you too long. I just want you to define a couple of things for me based on your experience and from your perspective. Happiness.
It's what lights your soul on fire. It's it's what you want to do every day. And I think that for most people, it comes down to love and connection, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's not material, it's not money, it's not fame or celebrity status or likes on Instagram. You know, it's about, you know, connecting with other humans and actually truly, you know, feeling loved and loving yourself and loving others.
Okay. Strength.
I'd say, you know, strength obviously could take many definitions and, you know, based on what I've done.
Yeah.
I think strength really is the will to do whatever it takes.
Okay.
I think that, you know, that's kind of a universal definition that it can be applied anywhere.
So besides skydiving in the near future, what is next for you? What does the future hold for AJ Roberts?
So, like I said, I want to start a family, so that's high on the priority list.
Okay, congrats.
Right now, I'm living in Las Vegas. I'm going to get back to San Diego. The desert is not the same as the ocean, so and my time here has been well spent and ready to go back. I've been here, you know, just under a year now, but it was a good experiment, and we're ready to go back to the ocean. So, you know, I'm going to head back to San Diego and just continue to help people. You know, very focused right now. You know, if I look at my life and I look at like what I would want to be remembered for, you know, and I don't know where this comes from or why I feel driven for this, but you know, I want to, in my lifetime, I want to change the direction of the obesity curve, right? It's every year continues to grow, and more people come into the industry, and that number just continues to grow. There's more and more people who are overweight, which obviously is maybe a symptom, not a cause, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of something deep going on underneath. But the way I see doing that is, you know, is building an army of people who are fighting for the cause. And so I'm going to continue to, you know, help fitness business owners, help personal trainers, online entrepreneurs, anyone who's focused on transforming the lives of others for the better, to help them so that I've got, you know, an army, you know, on the ground level, and then hopefully work up into government in those bigger areas to fight some of the things that may be causing some of this, you know, the trend to continue to rise. And so I would like to, some point in my life, be able to say right there is when everything turned around and see that start to drop. So that's what drives me. And then that mission obviously can come through in many different ways, through many different forms. But right now I'm focused on, like I said, helping fitness business owners, you know, do their job better, work with more people in their communities and you know, change more lives.
Okay. So if people want to reach out to you and join that army, what's the best way to, where can people find you? What's the best way to contact you?
Yeah, either go to the website, ajroberts.com, mm-hmm. Or just, you know, add me on Facebook and send me a message.
Awesome. AJ, thank you very much for your time. It was a wonderful conversation. It's like I mentioned to start, you know, our talk, it's pretty surreal to be talking to you, you know, on Skype four years later after I was listening to you with my brother on the podcast driving up to Detroit. So it's very cool, man. Thank you so much.
My absolute pleasure.
have a great evening, man. Thank you. Another amazing episode in the books, fam. If you enjoyed the episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. If you are new to the show, don't be afraid to check out other episodes. And if you dig the content, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. If you ever have any questions, feedback, or you just want to hit us up, please don't hesitate. Email address is contact@unchartedperformance, or you can hit me up directly at powell@unchartedperformance.com, Facebook and Instagram @unchartedperformance, and if Twitter is your thing, @reachuncharted. And give us a follow and tag us to let us know who and where you are. As always, thank you for listening and supporting the podcast, and talk to you next week. Cheers, guys.